We did have some discussions also on the general theme. This is Avi Doria, again, NCSG, on the general theme of this. And first of all, and I think the opinion comes into other, you said pro-con and other, in that the view that the NCSG has taken to its council members is that they are representatives elected to listen to us, to do their best, because we're very diverse. We don't have one common viewpoint on almost any issue. You know, we get into a lot of discussions. We have a meeting before every one of the council meetings. It's an open meeting for the membership to sort of talk about the issues. You know, all kinds of opinions fly, and then the council members are basically expected to go off and in some way represent the views of the non-commercial stakeholder group. And so there's certain trust that's put in them to go off and do the right thing, and if you don't do the right thing, we'll yell at you, we won't elect you again, and if you really, really don't do the right thing, we may even vote you out. But basically, as opposed to any sort of directed effort. So I think, and when we've talked about these ideas, I think we've largely been comfortable with the notion of managerial extending to adding a couple names to increase the diversity as long as it comes out of the group of names that we've all added. That some of these intermediate activities that are sort of very difficult to do in any other way, because that those certainly are permissible within the extended broad meaning of what it means for the council to be managerial. Certainly, managers are picking people to go fill roles in things all the time. And if the managers can't do that, then we really have a mess, because there's, in something like this, the iterative process of going through many, many times to finally get to something that's sufficiently diverse, if we can't have our few managers sit down and figure it among themselves, seemed to us that this was the easiest way to do it. So that's what I say. It's not quite pro or con. It's sort of other. So I'll stop speaking now.
Thank you. Let me ask if anybody else has any thoughts on this topic. I see Marilyn. I see Christina. Yes? Okay. Go ahead, Marilyn.
Thank you, Steve. I have thoughts about the concept and then thoughts about the particular incident, so the particular example. I think the concept is a very important one, and it's hard for all of us right now to read all of the documents and the published statements about the role of stakeholder groups, and et cetera. But there, I think one of the things that we're all going to need to really sort through is a better understanding of what the functions of the stakeholder groups are, and realizing that each of the stakeholder groups will have some unique characteristics. And in particular, within the CSG, I envision perhaps even more uniqueness than some of the other stakeholder groups. I will say that there's a very diverse set of opinions within the constituencies themselves and within the CSG, and sometimes I'm not sure that's understood by all of the other stakeholder groups, but there's a fair amount of diversity of interest in our stakeholder group. The need, however, to understand that according to the bylaws, the function of the council is about GTLD policy, and it's not about governance of the GNSO, I think is an important distinction. I just secondly want to say that recently I've observed that staff and others have begun to write the word GNSO when they often mean GNSO council. And the supporting organization is different from the council and is a sum of now maybe four parts. And I don't think we've had a chance yet to think that through.
Thank you. Christina, do you want to, and please identify yourself for the...
Christina Rosette, IPC. I think one thing that just in the context of this particular motion, I think one thing that... perhaps might be helpful in understanding a little bit more clearly where we're coming from, as at least I understand it, is that it is certainly the case that in much the same way, Aubrey, that the NCSG trusts its counselors to represent its interests, the CSG trusts its counselors to represent its interests. But what you have here is a situation where candidates are potentially being approved subject to a 60% threshold in each house, which means as a practical matter, counselors in the other shareholder group in that house could potentially effectively veto. So it's really more that, you know, it's not so much that, I guess it's really more that you all didn't elect me to represent your interests, and we didn't elect Mary to represent our interests. So once you start making voting thresholds that are going to cross over, that's where I think you have a greater potential for concern about, gee, at that point, maybe we need to send it back to the stakeholder group.
And identify yourself, please.
Bill Drake from NCSG. Well, I chaired the drafting team that put together the process, and what we tried to do was, in fact, to come up with something that would be as stakeholder-based as possible and depoliticized as possible. We figured, based on the experience with the initial effort around the ATRT, when we had had two slots that were open to competitive selection through elections, which seemed to make people kind of agitated about various issues, that the thing to do was to try to dampen all that down by basically saying, in effect, you know, the baseline here is each stakeholder group gets one representative, and that's the end of the day. The problem is, of course, then that could end up with a real lack of diversity, and unless we were to mandate at the front end that somehow stakeholder groups were in coordination with each other to try to achieve diversity at the front end. So then we thought that would be difficult, so why don't we at least have a mechanism whereby it turned out that the four bottom-up selections didn't meet certain kind of baseline criteria, there'd be at least a mechanism optionally available if people agreed on a consensus basis to add others. Now, the idea there was, per what Avery said, the council members are elected representatives of their stakeholder groups, and they can collaborate together and try to work something out in a 60% kind of context that would be reflective of general stakeholder will. Now, if you don't trust each other enough to do a voting procedure for those kinds of diversity additions, then basically it becomes very difficult to imagine how you're going to do that. Now, the proposal that you've added is to sort of constrain that a little bit by saying we give preference to those who were flagged, and I can understand the argument for doing that from your perspective. It raises, though, I mean, as we got into the discussion on the council list, it became clear that that was based on a set of reflections amongst you guys about exactly what the role of the council is and so on, that indeed we had not had the conversation about. I think that there's a lot of ambiguities in our collective understandings of exactly what the council's role is. I mean, for example, to me, when you suggested, Christina, that a vote like this would be sort of above the stakeholder groups and separate from the stakeholder groups, I have a hard time getting my head around that because I think of the representatives who are doing it as being reflections of the stakeholder group's will. So it brought to the fore some underlying philosophical questions about the role of the council that I think have to be addressed. I'm not sure whether trying to tackle that through the vehicle of this particular vote is the best way of getting at that. It's a much broader conversation, and pending resolution of it, I'm not sure that this is the best way to go about trying to tackle it. So, you know, I think that the process that the drafting team came up with was sufficient, and I don't necessarily see how what's being suggested is better, although it's not a huge difference and not something that I would carry on about if it doesn't resolve itself in the way that the drafting team hoped. But, you know, I don't see that right now. I haven't heard the argument that makes me understand why it would be especially better to do it that way. So there's the meta issue, and then there's the immediate issue, and I don't know which you prefer to address more directly. Here.
Okay. I know Avery wanted to be recognized. Let me just see if there's anybody else who wanted to to be in the queue at this point. I don't see anyone else, so Avery.
Thanks. In listening to what Christina said, it seems like it's almost less, and if I'm understanding correctly, which of course I might not be, it's almost less of what is the task of the council, what is a management task, versus what is the role of a NOMCOM appointee to break a tie, and should this be a higher threshold? In other words, because what the issue that you specifically brought up was that one stakeholder group plus the NOMCOM appointee could make a decision that didn't represent your stakeholder group's perspective. And the argument was more that of you don't trust, you know, Mary shouldn't have to trust you. You shouldn't have to trust Mary.
But we do.
Well, of course you do. And that's why I picked. And that was the example you used, so I had to go back to it. Yes, I didn't have the impression that I was saying you didn't trust each other. But that you shouldn't have to trust the members of another stakeholder group to feel that the decision was made. And as I was listening to you, the two things occurred to me is that the threshold is really more a problem, and the reason the threshold is a problem is because it could be just one stakeholder group plus the NOMCOM that made a decision that the other stakeholder group was not comfortable with. And I'm almost wondering if we're attacking the wrong solution, as it were, to the issue that it's not the role of the council to make these decisions, but rather the representation's not working out correctly.
I think it's a little of both.
Yeah, I don't think we can. Yeah, I think all the speakers have recognized there's actually some larger issues here that go beyond this particular matter that the council is going to vote on, and I don't want to get too bogged down in the weeds of the particulars of that. I will just recognize myself just to say one thing, which is that, Avery, as you said, the function of GNSO Council is management, and a manager has to be able to select people and so on and so forth. But it's management of what? It's management of the policy development process. Nothing, to my mind, in the AOC review team is the policy development process. It didn't come from the policy development process. It might lead to a policy development process, but basically it's happening because I can enter into an agreement with the United States government and with some other governments, and the result is, among other things, these teams. So to me, and some of them deal with policy issues and some of them don't, and obviously policy development might come out of it, but I don't see if this is the policy development process, then everything I can touches is the policy development process, and I don't think that's correct. That's my view anyway. I'll ask Marilyn, one to be recognized, and then Bill, and anybody else? Because I think we do need to try to wrap up since we have other topics here.
I'd just like to follow on to that and say that I fully agree with everything you've said, but also that this is a larger meta topic for us that I think we need to have a short-term solution to how we deal with the selection process for the who is and the SSR, and then have the longer discussion about the meta issue and what is policy that is within the bylaw assignment or what is about ICANN. I do think that while, and I think the three examples we're looking at immediately, AOC, review teams, SSR, and who is, are good illustrations. SSR is not a GTLD policy issue. It's not even just a GNSO issue. Who is. Affirmation of commitments, I think, is not, but might lead to. So if maybe we could focus on the interim solution for the approval of the process for the selection process, and on one other topic that I'd like to mention. I've spoken to some of you individually. It's my personal view that we need to, that I would like for us individually or collectively to strongly push forward on the need for one representative per SG and all of the RTs. Regardless of whether there are independent experts, I think that the SGs are each disadvantaged by lowering the number of appointees to the review teams.
I'm happy to say that I strongly agree with Marilyn on this particular point. And, you know, the council tried to say this to Giannis, but was getting a lot of pushback. But I think we could try to take a second blow at it. Just two other real quick points, though, I just wanted to make. First, I mean, on the point about, you know, is it policy development process or not? We're trying to draw a bright line around it, and I can understand the rationale for what you're suggesting. On the other hand, if you think about it, a lot of what the review teams are doing is really they're looking at the GNSO PDP, they're looking at outputs of the PDP. So it's kind of, to me, they're not completely separable activities in some senses. The second point, I guess, I would say is, you know, one thing to bear in mind, what we're talking about here in this particular case is the possibility of adding, primarily for optics, my guess is, one or maybe two names to the pool from which the selectors will pick. In reality, it's probably likely the case that the selectors will invariably pick the ones that were endorsed in the first instance by the stakeholder groups. That's what happened in the first instance, right? We put forward a broader slate with some other names for diversity, but of course they picked the ones that had the backing. So the practical effect is probably, you know, the chances of us ending up with somebody being on a review team to represent the GNSO who doesn't really enjoy much support strike me as fairly minimal, you know. The last point I would make is there another dimension of the amendment that was being suggested by CSG. It has to do with not making it a permanent process. The mandate that we originally had was to try to design something that we would use going forward so we wouldn't have to go through this reinventing the wheel each time. And I guess the argument is, well, we want to make sure through more experience that this is the precise formula before we continue with it. But I would suggest to you that there's nothing that would preclude us, the GNSO Council or the GNSO more generally, however you like to view it, to come back and review the process and change it again if we felt we had to. So I don't really see that it's, from my standpoint, it's necessary to limit ourselves. It's a question of what's the baseline. I'd like the baseline to be that we try to make this work, and if we decide that it doesn't work, then we fix it rather than saying, boy, everything's so tentative, we can't make up our mind, so we'll do another cycle of this. So that's why, for me, it'd be better to do it the other way.
Thank you. And maybe it comes down to whether people feel the wheel is round enough yet. So for that. Okay. Unless there's any other comment on this topic, what I would suggest is that we move on. I think this has been some good points raised. I think obviously a number of council members are here, and we'll be talking with our council members further about the specifics of this issue and about the issue Marilyn raised about at least one stakeholder group representative, at least one representative from each stakeholder group, let me put it that way, on each team. But unless there's anything further on this, let me ask Avery if she wants to chair the discussion of the next
item. Sure, I'll do it, especially since I don't have a personal opinion on it at the moment, so it makes me quite good. So the next one is the 2011 budget operating plan views of the stakeholder groups. So since I don't have a personal statement to make on it, who would like to start with a personal statement? Yes, go ahead. Christine.
For the recording name. Okay, Christina Rosette. The diplomatic way to put this is that, heck with diplomacy. I think, it's inexcusable that when you look at the budget proposals that you continue to see all of the specifically targeted monies and funding going to the contracting party house. It's been that way for the past several years. You know, I can't speak for anyone else, but I know that the IPC has always noted that in its comments to ICANN. That doesn't seem to have made much difference, and frankly, I think this is one issue where with a united voice, we could hopefully achieve some change.
Okay, yeah, I think one of the reasons that I've never had a viewpoint on is there's never been any money for non-commercials, so we just never worried about it. So we probably could get united voice. Yes.
Marilyn. You know, there are two ways of looking at it. One is we insist on changing the title to support for contracted parties, which is what it is, and that also makes a very clear point. But the other issue is that actually the base of support to the constituencies is just not there in terms of the toolkit, the idea of providing secretariat services. The fact that it stretches on and on and on actually creates a hardship for all of us. And I think it is worth addressing. I also think that actually the reprioritization of funding, when you talk to staff, and I won't name which staff, but when you talk to staff, they are continually being asked to cut the things that they do that support the broad work of the constituencies and policy development in both Kenya and here. Not all of the subject matter experts were allowed to travel, which means that policy work is actually disadvantaged when the rare time when there can be face-to-face work with the community. I think there are lots of indications that although there's not sufficient commitment to the robust support, and I would include enforcement and compliance in that as well.
Yeah, I have a little to add to what this Steve Metallitz from the CSG, to what the last two speakers said. But I think if you look at the overall picture of the budget, it's the rate of revenue increase for ICANN is flatter than it's been in many, many years. And this has to do with the terms of the contract with VeriSign more than anything else. So it's a period of austerity, and we hear that certainly a lot in the GNSO. As Marilyn pointed out. At the same time, there are a few budget lines that are receiving 80, 70% increases, and they have to do with the security issues, DNSSEC, and some of the other activities. I'm not necessarily opposed to those activities, but first, I don't think it's been well explained what that gigantic increase in funding is actually going to. And second, people who understand these security issues better than I do have raised a lot of questions about the plans for ICANN and the proposal for a DNS cert and so forth. And I'm not sure, I'm not shocked to find this, but I don't think that ICANN is necessarily listening to comments on that any better than they have listened to comments from many of us on policy issues. So I think to put it in that larger context, I hope that we can. I'm not suggesting we should do this, but if we can speak with one voice on some of these budget issues, unlike a lot of the other things we're talking about, the budget will be decided at this meeting, and so it's very timely, both in the public forum and in other interactions that we have with the board to raise these points.
Hey, thanks. I had Jay Scott, and then I had Ron.
J. Scott Evans from the IPC. I just think it's abysmal that an organization that is getting ready to, by its own estimate, take on a larger percentage of contracts that it has to maintain than it's ever had in its history, gave a basically flat increase to the one department that has made strides, yet is still has been always underfunded and understaffed. And they're going to take on even more contracts than they've ever had before and flatline that actual department. I think that shows a tremendous lack of commitment to what they keep telling us in writing they are extremely committed to, and that is to ensure that people who make obligations or take on obligations for the benefit of operating within the DNS are living up to those obligations. And I think it's severely problematic from a planning standpoint that they've done that, and that needs to be pointed out to them.
Thank you. Ron?
Actually, Jay Scott stole my thunder a little bit. It's exactly my point. And it has been there's a number of us who have heard that, in fact, the current compliance department staffing is not up to the amount that they anticipated it would be. In fact, we're only running at about 66% today. So roughly, don't hold me to the numbers, but what I am saying is that department is one-third understaffed and there's no increase in funding, and they've been told to slow hires. So this really is abominable.
Okay, I have a question because I want to roll this one up and get to the next one. We only have an hour. Is I understand the speaking with one voice. Is there a desire from those that put this on the table for a common statement that could be drafted and agreed to at our Tuesday stakeholder group meetings? And if so, do we want to right now have a couple people from each of the stakeholder groups raise their hands and say they will work together on a common statement? Were you raising your hand for that or wanted to comment?
I'd like to raise I'd like to offer another approach, which might be consistent statements, but statements that allow any prioritization of subject. I think it would be difficult, given the schedule we have in the CSG, to take on approval of a co-drafted statement. But I think others may have a different view. I think it would be possible to have a consistent philosophy underpinning statements that then offer, because I'm suspecting that even my own constituency may wish to say something all into its own at the public mic. But we should hear from others.
I wasn't precluding that everyone would make their own statements from their own perspective, but I was thinking that it might be possible to get a relatively stakeholder group neutral, almost the first paragraph that came out of Christina's mouth, which was, it really isn't right that all the money goes that way instead of this way. So something that made the statement from the stakeholder groups, from the House, but still left it open for each of the groups, obviously, to bring up the specific, whether it was the compliance issue or the VAT or what have you. Yes.
I'll volunteer, but I guess I would like a little guidance from the group just to come back to Marilyn's point. Is the point that we want to be on par, or do we want to say, look, you're going to give all the money to contracted parties, call it contracted party, you know, contracted party house funding? Which of those two do we want?
Well, but it's Marilyn. I just clarify, but I also went on to say that we do want funding for the toolkit, and we do want adequate resources. So I was just making a point, Christina, that if it is all going to be contracted party funding, call it that. But I'm not saying that we should not call for adequate funding for the things that are needed for the full set of constituencies.
Can we get a group? I mean, obviously, you've already volunteered, and I think it's good. If we could get, and then if we can't agree to a statement, at least we'll have something that will serve as talking points when people are getting up there. But yes, Jessica.
I think rather than having a joint statement, if we could just have a couple of bullets on the issues that we have found some commonality on that we would all make sure we hit when we spoke. So rather than having a joint statement, just we all say, and in agreement with X, Y, Z, we would like to say blah. And that way it takes less time for everybody. We just sort of have a common set of ideas.
I guess, all right, I'll volunteer as well. To the extent that, would it be worth it if there's a couple or a few of us that want to just try and put something together to send back, and if we succeed in making a brief, agreeable joint statement, we'll make that plus the mic, and if for some reason it slips through the cracks, we'll still make the statements at the mic?
So at the moment we have two people. Is two enough? Two's enough for me.
Probably is. Actually.
Two's enough for me. Are you guys willing to just be two? Plus...
Don't blame us.
You trust each other. And we settled that at the previous
It's already
issue,
been established.
So, yeah, it's already been established. Okay, fantastic. So we'll move on to the next item, which I'll pass back to Steve.
Thank you. And I'm pleased that we've gotten some progress forward on that last one, too. I think that's a good step. Election of Board Seat 14. As I mentioned, the only constitutional duty on our agenda here is this election. Board Seat 14 is Rita Rodan Johnston's seat. It expires June 2011. I recall seeing, although I don't exactly, the council adopted a resolution about the election for the last seat and the procedures for that. And I recall for that that they set some kind of timetable that basically the election has to happen 3 months prior to the expiration of the term, so that which makes sense. So that brings us back to March 2011. And obviously it takes some time to have an election and candidates to be considered and so on and so forth. So basically I think it is timely for us to start, this isn't a urgent item, I think it is timely for us to start working on our constitutional duty here. And I suppose what I would like to suggest is that if we can identify maybe not just one person from each stakeholder group, but two or three who would agree to work together and try to come up with a procedure. I don't think this needs to be anything very complicated, to be honest, but we have to have a timeline. We also have to figure out how are we going to vote. I mean, how is this House going to there's provision in it for what thresholds have to be adopted, to put our candidates forward. I think there's provisions about that in the GNSO restructuring, but there may well be voting questions and there could be other things that arise. So I just think it's worth having a small group put their heads together and circulate something that at the latest, I guess, we could try to agree on at the Cartagena meeting, and perhaps we could even have the procedure worked out earlier if there's a method for each of the stakeholder groups to approve it. So that's my suggestion, and I guess we need to I guess before the end of the Brussels meeting, and if we can today, let's see if we can put that team together and they can get started working online about this. I guess I should ask if there are any further other views on this, number one, and number two, if there aren't and people think this is a good way to proceed, are there any volunteers to work on the...
I accept the... having.
I'd like to ask a question of all of us to think about. I think it's also something we should spend more time talking about, but not necessarily today. If you have not yet read the self-review of the board, I would urge you to do that. And I would also urge you to ask yourselves whether, with the challenges this organization faces, we are actually thinking strategically about looking at the expertise and qualifications of board members to ensure that we are bringing into the board the kind of board members who are capable of adopting more of a governing role rather than a managing role, while also understanding the responsibility of ICANN to fulfill its responsibilities in acting in the public interest in what it does. Now, I'm not suggesting that necessarily changes our procedure, but I think you really, if you haven't had a chance to read that self-review, you might find it very illuminating, and then you might do your own private tick-off and see if you actually agree with it. The other point I would make is that in the enhancement of the GNSO, there is a requirement, I think it really is a requirement, that the communications between the SGs and the council increase and that the communication flow between the board members and the SGs increase. So I'd like to focus on that, and I'd be willing to have a further conversation about that, because I think it's something we also have to think about. We really benefited from Bruce being very available, but we have to not think about people and personalities, but about processes and structures.
I think that constituted a second volunteer to work on this, because certainly the criteria, this process suggestion could come up with criteria and things we should be looking for and prioritizing in electing a board member. Wendy.
I would just note to anyone interested in reading. that fascinating report that it was generated some time ago and voted not to be released by members of the board at that time.
Okay, so it's the leaked self-reporting. In any case.
I guess I should say it's Marilyn that in order to qualify to be a member of the House, one has to become an internet detective.
Okay. Are there any other volunteers to join Wendy and Marilyn in this task? If not, I think we can certainly take on the responsibility of finding more volunteers. I mean, could I ask your group to come up with another name or two? Right.
Yeah, we'll see if we can find a guy to join the group. But
we'll see. Okay, we'll see if we can find one or two other people. Yeah. Okay. Are there any other comments on this agenda item? If not, back to you, Avery, for
The next one is future communications within the House. Now, that one came up in terms of it's really even getting this meeting organized was really sort of a, oh, okay, who's talking for your House? Oh, okay, who's talking, you know, and sort of the bootstrap of getting to the point where we could even plan and request a meeting was difficult. So it basically opened the question. Since I had the ability to build mailing lists, I said, oh, okay, well, I can build one for, you know, the combined leadership, so at least there's a communication path, and was told essentially, well, thanks for the offer, but we don't want to get that formal about things. So there's a question on the table is sort of, how do we, I mean, okay, Steve and I know each other, and, you know, but I don't assume it's Steve for you guys always. So, yeah, so that's the question. Chase Scott.
Would it be impracticable for each stakeholder group to nominate a liaison that would then communicate with one another prior to these meetings and work with their executive committee within their stakeholder group? And then just that would be their task, would be to communicate with one another, you know, if we don't want to have – I mean, I'm not opposed to the having a list that's just the two executive committees, that. But I think what happens then is it just adds another layer of email coming in with regards to – because most of those people are so engaged on so many other things, it might be easier if you had one person that's just the point person.
Other comment? Okay. Yes, Marilyn?
I do have a comment. This is a topic of discussion within the CSG before we make any proposals for what works best. I think the topic we might talk about now is what are the things we need to communicate around and how frequently, et cetera, because actually there may be times where we would need frequent communication, such as doing a discussion about candidates or review of shared work, and other times where we have very minimal communication needs. But I would prefer that within the CSG we have a conversation about what we would propose would work within the CSG first.
Okay, that's quite fine. Yes, Philip.
Yeah, I think one just needs to be eminently practical. I mean, clearly we don't want another mailing list because that just has issues to do with updating and changing all the time. But having a cascade system seems to make sense because of the hierarchical structure that we've created. I mean, from the perspective of the CSG, to some extent, we are currently sufficiently organized because we have an executive committee which is created from our constituencies, and we have a rotation of those three constituencies in terms of a point person for each ICANN physical meeting. This time around, it's IPC, I guess. So that creates a natural point person from our side. So if there's a similar point person from from yours that is within your existing structure, that strikes me as the two essential parts of communication, and it's simply up to them to cascade it down throughout the structure, and therefore becomes a relatively simple thing to do. And presumably, a meeting organizationally, I guess we're going back to Glenn in terms of room allocation and that sort of thing.
Yeah. To respond to that, first of all, I wasn't quite sure what you meant by a cascading system, but as you went on, I think I started to understand. Okay, in the NCSG, it's been fairly clear there's an executive committee. Yearly, it's going to elect a chair, and that's the point person for that year, unless that chair quits or gets kicked out for being disagreeable. But, you know, which could easily happen. But
it's a good criteria.
It is. Yeah, that is one of our criteria, is to be too disagreeable. But anyway. Always civil, please. So basically, when do you, and so I have no problem keeping in touch, but I was at a point where I didn't know who to be in touch with other than the list of six names, which were the, you know, and then Steve got in touch with me, and I knew that it was Steve for now. But, and so that's fine with me, and me passing it on to the, you know, the rest of the people on the NCSG executive and policy is easy. The other thing I wanted to bring up in terms of what I've heard is it may not be processed. We may not have to wait for a face-to-face meeting when there's an issue like whether it's the budget or some other, where there's an assumption that here's something that we may want to do some coordination with to be able to sort of raise that flag, other than just among the council members. But, of course, anything that's a policy issue is probably best raised among the council members. So, yeah.
Yeah, I would just – this is Steve Metallitz again. I would say, without preempting the discussion within the CSG, I think we can come up with our point person and let you know. And at least I just want to keep this as lightweight as possible. So I think if both groups can have one, whether you call it a liaison or something else, and each group could just, you know, for your group, if you want it, could always be the chair. For us, we could figure out some other, whatever we want to do. So, but I will say that soon after this meeting, we will be in, someone will be in touch with you to say, this is the person.
Great. And I'll go back to the NCSG Executive Committee and ask if any one of them would like to take this away from me, in which case I'll gladly hand it to them. Okay. The next thing that we had, and we have 5 minutes left, and we never thought we'd get there, was anybody else, did anyone have any other comments on that? No. Was any other business? And I could pass the chair over to Steve, or I could just see if someone has any other business, any other topic that we should bring up quickly, anything else we wanted to work on together? No. So we call it done, and keep talking and meet again next time. And our two little groups, we each have to find another member for the
At least one other member.
Yeah, it can be two, but at least one other member for the
board seat 14.
For the board seat, and because by the time we meet next time, we really should know what we're doing.
Yes.
Thanks. It was a pleasure.
Thank you.
Please have your passcode and conference leader's name available. A coordinator will assist you momentarily.